I think this is a good song to get you into a Monday, isn't it? I think it is.
A little cream, a little fresh cream to get you going.
Yeah.
I put that in my coffee this morning.
Some cream. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. This is VH1's Behind the Hits. You're in the right place. Should be a pretty good show today. Michael Alexander joins us. Michael, longtime stand-up comic, has put together a documentary about stand-up comedy in and around Chicago. He'll be in.
And you're featured in it.
Yeah, I've not seen it yet. It's premiering next week, I think.
I can't wait.
They shot some footage of me, so I'm hoping I'm in it. I would like to be in it.
That would really suck if he's coming on the show. Hey, Michael, so where's Bill? Oh, he's cutting room floor.
Yeah, yep.
Then we'll cancel the interview.
Over the years, I've had so many friends do parts in movies, and then when they go to see the movie, they're no longer in the movie, and that's upsetting. Because, you know, you get very excited.
Yeah, and you tell everybody.
That's why my wife has been in several movies, and she always says, I'm not telling anybody until I've seen it and I know for sure that I'm in it.
She is one patient lady, and that story not only proves it, but she's with you.
Married to me. How about that? I was talking to Steve Bertrand earlier. Over the weekend, he was out of town at a wedding, and it was a wedding where he knew very, very few people.
Those aren't fun for me.
I was just going to ask you, you've been to some where you probably only know maybe the bride and groom, or maybe you're friends of the parents of the bride or groom.
Or maybe you just know either the bride or the groom.
That's
yeah.
it. And you feel an obligation to go because it's somebody you know and you care about. But still...
I wouldn't have gone.
Oh, no, it was great.
It was great.
Steve enjoyed it. Yeah.
I know exactly what you're saying, but we found a nice crowd and it was... my best man's son's wedding. And
you have to go to that.
He was my best man. I was his best man. Yeah.
And so you knew him before he was born, right?
I knew Stein before he was born, yes. Before he was born.
Yeah. That's his name, his first name?
Yeah, he's Dutch.
I love that.
Good.
And because
That's
he's
so
Dutch,
cool.
Stein, Steve gave them Dutch boy paint as a wedding gift. Isn't that a nice
and wooden shoes.
And some wooden shoes.
Okay, flower bulbs, what's next? Come on.
Oh, yeah, tulips.
It was so, Stein and Josie. It was a great, really, I just the opposite. I was telling Sharon, I'm like, I like weddings now.
What changed, Steve? Why did you like it so much more?
I'm just sitting there watching.
Yeah, no pressure.
For the most part, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I loved Kevin Richter's wedding.
Yes,
and Sarah. That was really...
Another example.
That was a fun wedding.
It was unique. It was, I knew you guys, I knew many people there.
It wasn't, I know this will sound terrible for people who are extremely religious, but Kevin's wedding was not overly religious.
There are a lot that aren't anymore.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's true.
Because then more of a variety of people come.
Yes.
I, of course, wanted everybody to sit through the hour plus, you know, Catholic mass. Because I wanted to get married in the eyes of the church.
Of course you did.
And Father Hal.
I didn't mean yours was overly religious.
Father Hal.
I know you know him. Everybody knows him. I got his connection through Johnny B.
Oh, did you?
I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yours was just the right amount of religious, I felt. It wasn't too religious.
Well, yeah, because then I was totally wasted after the mass.
Yep.
You guys didn't even come to mine.
I didn't know you.
Well, it would have been fun.
But have you been, I always call it the odds and ends table. So you've got an eight top. And there's two people from Duluth who came in. They know somebody. I don't know who they know, but they know somebody. There's two people where one of them was like a childhood friend. I was friends with Mark in kindergarten, and we kiddingly said, when you get married, you're coming to my wedding. My wife and I are almost always at that odds and ends table because the couple always goes, well, you guys, you get along with people, and nobody knows anybody at that table.
I don't know if that's a good thing or
I
just
don't
a
think it's a good thing.
They make it sound like it's a good thing.
Right.
Did I put you at an odds and ends table?
Right.
I don't think I did. You sat with some good people.
I was at...
Ed Obradovich, did you sit with him? I know you saw him.
He was not at our table, but somebody said the word Bears, so he sauntered over.
Yeah.
Like somebody just mentioned the Bears and he came over. It's not going to be a good year this year. He just started yelling.
He's so friends with my in-laws, so he might have sat with their friends.
I was with all radio industry people at your wedding.
Well, see, good. I gave you a good table.
It was a very good table, but there's been so many that we've been to where it is just kind of a weird mix and match.
I'm never at that table.
You've not been at that table. You need to experience it at least once. I also like the table. I have twice sat at tables where, because of awkward divorces, they have to put somebody on one end of the room and somebody on the other end of the room. And twice I've been at a table where I'm on one of those end of the room tables.
That's awkward.
Where do not let him near Valerie. Whatever you do, don't let him near Valerie.
One of them should not go then. Doesn't that put like a weird...
Oh, that gets tough though. Because then you if you mean you can only invite one or the other.
Well, one could politely decline. Like, is so-and-so going to be there? Then I'm not going.
Oh, yeah. There was a funeral like that in my family, where it was two brothers who did not get along, and their wives had to match it up so that they were not at the funeral at the same time.
Oh, at the wake.
At the wake.
Yeah.
At the wake. Right. That takes some orchestrating.
Can't people just get along?
No.
We expect the whole world to get along, and there are people in their own families that can't get along.
I know. But somehow these Dutch weddings, Wendy, everybody gets along. I don't understand it.
There's some great cadre people there from the Netherlands.
Was there really?
Sure.
Was the food indicative of that part of the world, Steve?
It was in Iowa. They've lived here. Rob's lived here since, you know, for 30 years or so.
So just corn and Yoo-hoo.
So just corn. Right. Some beef. Yeah, grass-fed beef.
Did y'all buy your lottery tickets this weekend?
No.
I didn't buy any either.
You ended up not buying any.
I changed my mind.
I'm surprised.
And it just rolled over, so now it's like $5 billion. No, what is it? It's up a lot.
It was just over a billion, so a turnover.
$1.6 billion or something like that.
Is it that high?
Yeah. No one's going to win that. It's just going to keep rolling over till the world explodes.
You had this whole plan in place, though, to go to little out of the way.
On the way home from tree time, there was a little like Minnie's Market or something like that. And yeah. I thought, that is the place that's going to win. But then there was a lot of construction and traffic, and I didn't feel like pulling over.
I went in to buy gas on my way home from tree time in Lake Barrington. And in the gas station, this was my plan. Go in, hand them $20, go out. It took 11 minutes because there were so many people line buying lottery tickets. And sometimes they tell you the story of why they chose those numbers. They'll, not me, but the person behind the...
Did the person ask behind the desk?
No.
Oh, boy.
No. And they just want to move them along.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear the story of why you selected those particular numbers, but people want to share that.
I wonder if they want... Somebody in Oak Forest won $1 million.
Oh, probably my family.
Was it $1 million? I think so.
There were two. There was one in the city and then one in Oak Forest.
$1 million, though, right?
So that meant they got all the numbers but one? Is that what that
I don't
means?
Even know how that works. And can I be honest with you why I didn't buy tickets and I'm super embarrassed?
Because you hate money.
I don't know how to do it.
You just go in and you tell them the numbers.
I don't have numbers. I was going to do a quick pick, but
well,
then there's other. There's a mega ball or something. I don't know how it works. It would have taken too much thought to get $10 worth of tickets.
Here's what I do, Wendy. I go into the store and I say, I'll have a Mega Millions.
Yeah.
And then they say, okay. And then they...
Done.
And I give them $2.
Print it up.
They don't say, do you have numbers or would you care for a quick pick?
Or have you been to any Dutch weddings recently? Sometimes they'll ask that. Wait, yeah. How did you know that? You just look like you may have been to a Dutch wedding. That's how I knew that.
Ludafisk, is that the...
No.
That's not Dutch.
Gefilte fish?
No, that's not Dutch either.
What's Dutch food?
Steve?
I don't know.
No?
They live in Iowa.
All right. Still, though...
That's all you need to know.
Usually there's some kind of thing representing.
Right.
You know, it's a good thing, interesting
Dutch
you say
chocolate.
That. I don't think there was a anything... Well, we all had to pay our share.
He went Dutch. So I got it. Whee!
That's a good time, Steve.
Bertrand's on fire on a Monday.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll get you some news in a little bit.
Did you blow away this weekend?
Did I go away?
Blow away.
Oh, blow away.
My God,
no,
the winds. Yeah, I did a stupid thing. A line blew down in our yard.
Yes.
And I touched it.
You
that
did.
Was really stupid.
Why?
Because it was hanging down like a sagging clothesline, and it was like you would have gotten choked to death if you walked through the yard. So I kind of,
Which would kill you first, the electrocution?
Well, that's just it. I did look at the house, and it was connected to an old DSL that we had hooked up. If I ever had to broadcast from home in the old days, you had a DSL line.
Right.
It was connected to that, so my assumption was it wasn't electric.
Oh, but you're playing you're guessing game with
that. I know, but I had to pick it up and drape it over our flag holder, because otherwise it was on the ground and the dog would have chewed it.
Yeah.
And so then I didn't know who to call, because you look up your service, AT&T, and it says landline service. So I clicked on that, and they're like, "What's your landline?" I'm like, "I don't have one anymore."
Oh.
They're like, "Well, why are you calling us? Have you lost service?" I said, "No. Our U-verse is up. Everything's fine. It's just there's a cord in our yard dangling down."
I like that they challenged you on that. "Well, why are you calling us? We've got more important things to do than talk to you."
They just couldn't understand. And it's like, I didn't know who to call. You know, if I call cellular service, I don't need a wire.
Normally, although it's the weekend and I don't think they're around, City Hall is the call you would make usually, right?
I live in the suburbs, so.
Yeah,
you mean, the village?
They would come over. Fire department would come look at it.
Yeah, tell you if it was live or not.
After the idiot named Wendy touched it, I realized it wasn't an electrical threat. So,
did you touch it with your tongue or your finger? I hope this isn't electric.
I swung on
it. Let me see. Ah! Why did I do that?
The kids yelled at me. Jim was out of town. He was in L.A. for the weekend with Judy Pilek. And
that's not weird at all. Why?
No, he wasn't.
Who thought that was weird?
He was out of town, and the boy said, "Why did you touch it?"
Yeah.
I said, "Because it was in the way."
Still.
But I said I looked, and it was connected to the house. It was one of the lower lines. I know that there are electrical lower lines as well.
As you were touching it, were you bracing yourself for some possible electricity coming?
That was after I made contact. Then I this is what I heard as I was touching it. No!
Yeah, I'm sure. Did you wear any kind of...
I had a football helmet on. That's another story.
Is it a linebacker's helmet or a kicker's helmet?
Kicker.
Oh, so just that one bar.
Yeah.
For some reason, I would feel the need to put some sort of gloves on, but I think electricity would just zap right through the gloves.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure even if you're wearing rubber-soled shoes, if you touch a live wire, it's not really going to make a difference.
Did you guys know you're talking out loud, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I looked to see where it was connected on the house.
Did you stand in a small, like, Mr. Turtle swimming pool filled with water just to be safe?
I should have. It was under the deck. I should have stood in there.
Actually, you should have pulled your car up, because you can never be hurt by lightning strikes in your car.
Oh, that's true.
That's not true either. The rubber wheels, I mean, better than, you know, getting hit directly.
Yeah. Much better.
But so I guess the phone man is coming out today to fix it sometime.
Oh.
And they're like, "Where is it?" I said, "You walk in the yard, you'll see it
right away." You're so lucky that didn't have electrical current running through
it. I know. I explained that to the woman, the operator who answered the phone. I said, "I stupidly touched it. And, you know, the more I think about it, if that was an electrical wire, I wouldn't be making this call."
No.
I swear I'll talk to anyone who will listen to me. Anyone.
That's why we don't want you buying Mega Millions tickets.
Well, someone suggested I just buy it online, because then I don't have to talk to anybody and go, here's a reason why I picked these numbers.
There are texters who say, now I don't play the lottery, so I don't know, but I'm guessing this is accurate, that there are apps you can play for either automatic, you know, so you lock your numbers in, right?
Yeah.
So they're making it easy for you.
Do you print up the ticket then? Knowing my luck, it's like, oh, these were my numbers, but I never hit enter.
Wendy bought the winning ticket, and then she moved an electrical line.
Bad day.
Right.
Yeah.
Horrible day.
Good news, bad news story.
That is.
That's not good. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll get you some news, and then there's a lot more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Spooky, scary stuff on Halloween.
Are you okay?
I choked myself.
After Heimlich the Phantom. You may know this theme song. This is the theme song from Netflix's The Haunting of Hill House, which really is very, very good. If you're looking for something scary to watch, you know, with Halloween just a week away, invest your time in the show. Would you agree?
It is unbelievably scary. I was asked, are there pop-outs? A few, but it's like a psychological thriller. It's a haunting thriller. It's really good.
Yeah. Somebody said there's an article today about it on Yahoo, And they say, The Haunting of Hill House viewers claim that the Netflix series is so scary that they want to vomit. Now, if you had created this show, this masterwork, this 10-part miniseries, The Haunting of Hill House, would you look at that as a compliment or a slam if somebody said, I enjoyed your show so much that it made me want to throw up? How would you take that news?
I don't throw up when I'm scared. Wet my pants, maybe.
Well, I understand the show gives you this certain uneasiness. There's all kind. If you read the article, there's a bunch of people coming forward saying, since I've been watching this, I'm having a very hard time sleeping. And I found myself, because I won't watch it in the day. I finally finished it over the weekend. It is, as I mentioned, it's 10 parts. It's 10 hours long. So I noticed that upon watching the show, I only watch it at night. I only watch it when everybody in my family is already asleep. So it's just me downstairs watching the show. That when I do the walk around the house to make sure things are locked, as I pass by windows, I'm like, wait, what was that? You know, there's a lot of that second guessing around the house since I've been watching this.
We live in an old Victorian house, so Michael is afraid to go back in the basement again.
Yeah.
And I said, it's different now. I mean, in the old days before we had it finished, it was like a concrete. I mean, it really looked old. And I'm not scared of my house now for some reason.
I'm not scared of my house, but has it put this thought in your head? The house that I grew up in, we were the first and only family to live in that house.
Same with
they
me.
They had it built. So, all right, so you know that
my childhood home.
You're living in a house and your family is the only one that's ever inhabited the house. But since watching this, as I'm walking around my house was built in 1915 or 1916 or something like that. So I'm going, wow, a lot of other people have been in this exact place where I am right now. And I don't know anything. I don't know who they are, what they did. I don't know anything about them.
Our house was built in the 1890s, and I went to the Historical Society to find out some information, and the oldest resident of LaGrange lived there for a while. He was waked in the house when he passed away.
That doesn't spook you even a little bit?
No, and then there were a couple of other articles about someone tripped in front of it and broke their leg, so it's like, is it haunted? I don't know. We've been there 20 years. Nothing that bad has happened.
Right, right. I'm not a believer, really, in your traditional ghosts.
I am.
But are you?
I really am.
See, then the fact that somebody was waked in the house would disturb me just a little bit. Just a little.
I don't know if he did. But there are people who die, you know, not like of natural causes in a house.
See, I don't want to know. Like, if there was some public record of that, I wouldn't want to look it up. I'd prefer not to know.
I mean, a murder would be terrible, and I believe that has to be disclosed.
Yeah, they have to tell you if something like that has happened.
But, you know, there are a lot of people who bring their loved ones home to die and, you know, in a hospital bed and stuff. And
I know.
Sometimes their spirit flies out of them and up into the attic and waits for other people
to
buy the house.
The attic? Is that the room they go to?
Where would you go?
The toy room. You stay in the toy room forever. That's fun.
You know, someday, like 100 years from now, when someone buys your home and there are no more toys in the toy room, I know you are going to haunt that room.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
But you will be what is it called? The poltergeist. You will be the prankster.
Yeah. I'll be a friendly spirit, like Casper. I'll be our generation's Casper, the friendly ghost. Now, I must ask you this, and I want to be sure, if you've not seen the show yet, don't worry. I'm not going to give anything away here. But there are several parts of the show, of The Haunting of Hill House, where there's an image that's so indelible and so disturbing. Like, I was thinking in my head, in all the years I've been watching TV, there's only a couple of images that have stuck with me as really, really, really scary. And I'll tell you what they are. Tell me if you agree with me or not. The made-for-TV movie Trilogy of Terror with Karen Black.
Karen Black. Oh, my God.
Right? So the image is... I guess I can kind of give this one away because it's 40 years old at this point.
And if you haven't seen it, then just come back and
it was
two
a
made
for TV movie. A guy named Dan Curtis. He's the guy who created Dark Shadows and Kolchak the Night Stalker. He made this made for TV movie, Trilogy of Terror. It's three short stories. Karen Black is in all three segments playing different characters.
She's awesome in it.
The last one, the scariest one, is she gets a fetish doll.
Yep.
A Zulu fetish doll in the mail.
Oh, my God.
And the fetish doll is angry.
It's a voodoo doll, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very angry. You guys, I just almost choked on my sandwich.
Let me share this sound effect with you then, Mary. Listen to this.
Yeah, that little sword thing.
Yes. Little spear.
Spear.
He had a spear.
Okay, now you're giving
me. And he ran around like a Tasmanian devil.
Very scary. Very, very scary.
It is. Oh, all right. I bet you wouldn't scare us now if we watched it.
No,
yes, it would. Yes, it would.
Believe me, Mary, I watched it a few years ago. Oh. It's still incredibly scary.
When is it on?
So frightening.
You can probably. I'm going to write this down because I want my kids to see it.
Can we Netflix it?
I do.
When they're bad.
No, because they're looking for scary movies.
Oh, this is it.
It's the best.
Although the other two in Trilogy of Terror, the first episode and the second episode, are just kind of okay.
I vaguely remember those because all I remember is.
Yeah. Very, very scary. All right. So that's been in my head since I was a little kid. The other one is a made-for-TV version of Salem's Lot.
That was pretty good, too.
Where the young boy, Lance, what's his name? The kid from James at 15. Lance something. Anyway.
Armstrong?
Not Lance Armstrong, Steve. No.
Hendrickson?
No, not Lance Hendrickson.
A lot?
Lance a lot? No. No. He's one of the Knights of the Round Table. Oh. He's the star of James of 15,
yeah,
later James
of
16. All right, so his friend, Danny Glick, dies in the miniseries.
Lance
Spoiler
Kerwin.
Alert.
Lance Kerwin.
Lance Kerwin. Thank you, Mary. Lance Kerwin. So his friend dies, and then a few nights later, as Lance is trying to take a nap, there's some tapping at the window, and he looks outside, and his friend is floating outside the window tapping, wanting to be let into the bedroom. And I there's no way to hide enough from that.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Under covers, under blankets, I'm just covering. I don't want to see this. And yet it was so frightening and perfect that I had to watch it.
How old were we when we saw that ballpark? Because I know that I closed
12
the
or 13.
I closed the shades and the curtains of my bedroom window after seeing that.
Every night as I was going to bed then, you don't want any window.
No exposed glass.
No. You don't want Danny Glick coming back asking you to let him in his room. All right. So, number one, Trilogy of Terror. Number two,
Salem's Lot.
Number three, Windy City Live. Any episode, any moment of any episode, Windy City Live. Very scary. So, the moments in this, in the Haunting of Hill House, there's several, and I'm not going to give them away because I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but there's a couple of images that are just so crazily frightening that
does
they
one
hold
involve
up.
A cane? Because that one,
yes.
I cannot.
Yes.
That has been in my.
Yes.
Cue when I go to sleep.
Yeah.
I cannot get that image out of my face.
Really scary. So I think, and I don't know who wrote this version of The Haunting of Hill House. I mean, every episode is written by a different writer or sometimes two writers, but somebody had to come up with the whole master plan of what's going to go where. There's a couple of things in there that play so perfectly on your childhood frights, on the things that almost every child is afraid of. And there's a couple of those moments where it's just perfect. If you like to be scared, this is going to do the trick.
It's creepy scare, though.
Yes.
It's not just like Halloween is good, and that's, you know, that's a great movie. It really is.
Yeah, the original?
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's a lot. I mean, there are pop-ups or pop-outs. What are they called?
When you think you're watching something and it's fairly peaceful, and then all of a sudden something jolts
you're
into
startled.
The camera.
Yeah, what they're called, pop-outs.
Yeah,
or
you can call it, yeah.
That's not what's scaring me so much in The Haunting of Hill House. It's what my imagination is taking me to. It's more psychological. It's just really good.
Yeah. I was thinking of this last week. It seems to me that the insane, scary person has sort of disappeared from our movies and TV.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there used to be like the just kind of... insane. It was an insane...
Do you mean like Michael Myers in Halloween or Freddy Krueger in Nightmare on Elm Street?
Sort
Pennywise,
of.
That kind of...
Or even just someone who was normal appearing but was just, you know, demented.
Yeah.
We kind of, I just think...
It's
gone away
from that.
I don't know if culturally we've moved away from that or...
Or maybe...
It also with The Haunting of Hill House, it's like there's such a mixed dynamic about the family. I mean, they're so loving yet so dysfunctional. I mean, you think it's a great family, and it's
well loving in the early years, and then
although really because they they're not helping each other.
Yeah.
It's just really a whole unique thing that's going on.
Do you have to watch it with some? I tried to get three members of my family to watch it with me this weekend because you guys were talking about it.
Yeah, any luck?
No.
Nobody will watch it?
Nobody will watch it.
I'll watch it again with you, Mary.
I'm not going to watch it by myself.
Hey, Terry, you're familiar with Trilogy of Terror, aren't you?
Yes, I am. My husband has the doll.
He does?
Yes, he does. It's like about 8 or 9 inches tall.
The Zulu warrior doll.
Is it in the house, or have you locked it up in a neighbor's garage?
No, he's still in the box. And we've had it for like 5 or 6 years. And when my stepson purchased it for his dad, because he just loved that movie, we get on a quest where we hear a certain item, and my husband's on a quest to look for it. And then his son purchased it for him. And he's been locked up in the basement for years in the box.
I bet he's not in the box. If you go check, he's going to be
No, he's upstairs now. I got over it. But he's in our living room now looking at us while we're watching the television. You can't help but focus looking at him at the corner of the TV.
So cool.
But he is like Bill. He collects certain toys. And another thing is he had to have the Creature from the Black Lagoon stuffed doll. And they're like his little babies, you know. He just loves those things. And of course, he has to stand right next to Betty Page, the 8-9-inch doll from her movie. So he is just like a big kid at heart. But that little doll, that creepy thing, it's just too scary. So.
Oh, that's excellent.
Thank you for calling, Terry. You've made Bill very, very jealous right now.
Yeah, extremely jealous.
Well, we told him at some of the toy collector stores that we go to, and they were like, oh, we want that doll. We want that doll. And he goes, nope, not for sale. Sorry. And we're not even going to say where we live.
Well, enjoy it. Happy Halloween, Terry. Thank you very much for calling. We appreciate it.
Bye, Terry. What are the indelible scenes that you can't shake from your head, especially from TV? Movies seems to have a lot of them, but in TV, it's really hard to get something that scares you forever. Do you have any? We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we were talking about spooky, scary things, things that are embedded in your memory, like the trilogy of Terror Doll, like many things in Haunting of Hill House.
You know what's funny is we were hoping for specifically television, because I think movies probably over the years have done a better job of having a moment or a scene that just stays in your brain forever. Several people are mentioning Twilight Zone episodes. The Talking Tina episode of Twilight Zone, that's the doll that came to life.
My name is Talking
that's
Tina.
That's it. There was an episode called To Serve Man.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a pretty scary episode. Had a nice ironic twist at the very, very end of the episode. People have mentioned that. Almost everybody mentioning movies. There's too many to mention. You know, all your favorite classic horror movies are mentioned. But we were hoping specifically for TV moments.
Your name is Talky Tina.
That's her.
Talky Tina. She's alive, Daddy.
With the late, great Telly Savalas in this episode.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Very good.
Don't you love watching the Twilight Zones and seeing these hugely famous actors that were, you know, William Shatner and the Wing?
The Gremlin on the Wing is, I think, the Twilight Zone's greatest moment.
I agree.
That one's really scary. And when you think about it, if you freeze frame it or just look at a picture of the Gremlin, it's almost laughable.
I know, but the whole concept of it, and when it's all put together, it's pretty freaky.
It pays off nicely.
All right, Rich is on the line with us. A lot of spooky things coming your way this Halloween, and I like it. Hi, Rich.
Good morning, you guys. How you doing?
Good. What did you have in mind?
Yeah, I'll preface it by saying I was a fearless kid. I was not afraid, and I grew up in the 60s, so in the 60s, and I was not afraid to be alone in the house. We had an unfinished basement. I would watch TV in the dark. I was not afraid of things. But when I was like six or seven, in the summer, and I'll never forget this, a cousin was babysitting me, and she told me, you got to watch this show, you love it, it's monsters, it's vampires. It was Dark Shadows, and there was an episode where this one vampire, she bit somebody, and it's just the way they set up the scene, if you ever were a fan of that show.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and I had like this love hate with the show. I would watch it because it would scare that you know what out of me. And I would know when there was going to be a vampire coming. I would go behind the TV and just like wait till it was done. But I watched that show, and I was terrified of it. But I wasn't terrified of anything else. And
Yeah. Have you watched The Haunting of Hill House? Because you should watch it. You'll be freaked out.
No, I've never even heard of it. Is it on cable?
It's on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to give that a shot. Night Gallery, too.
That was the best.
Love it.
Yeah.
You know, the cool...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Rich, the coolest thing about Dark Shadows is, it was really, really scary, but think about it, that was on in the afternoon, and none of us had the capability of taping a show then, so we were watching it midday, but it was that scary in the middle of the day. That's how scary it was.
Right. I watch it now online, and it's a hoot. It's just campy. It's great. I mean, but as a little kid, for the low budget that show had, it was incredibly atmospheric.
And I remember the bite marks on the neck, because they did the great makeup, and they really looked like they were puncture marks.
Yep.
Yeah, and I'll give you one other little tidbit, that the guy who produced Dark Shadows, his name was Dan Curtis. And he also did Trilogy of Terror.
Yes.
So he was, and he also did
Kolchak the Night Stalker. Yep.
Yes, Night Stalker. So he was really, the guy was really good at horror.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Dark Shadows for me.
Awesome. Rich, thank you for sharing.
You bet.
You can't let a listener have it. I know you mentioned it earlier, but you got to jump in.
I just wanted to let him know.
Steal their thunder.
I'm on his side.
I hear you, bro.
He made some great stuff, Dan Curtis. All right, we must take a break. We'll take a little break. We'll get you some news, and then there's more show ahead.
Can we just do something? All throughout this week, Monday through Thursday, we have $50 dinner certificates to White Pines Resort. It's just 90 minutes west of Chicago. It's in the White Pines Forest State Park in Oregon, Illinois. Delicious homestyle cuisine, generous portions in the resort's restaurant. You can book your stay and get more details at whitepinesresort.net. Here's what we're going to do Monday through Thursday. We're going to give people a $50 dinner certificate to White Pines. You can win it. And then on Friday, we're going to give you an overnight cabin stay. So we're building up for this. What number caller? 312-981-7200.
11, Wendy.
Caller number 11 will walk away with our $50 dinner certificate to White Pines Resort. Go to whitepinesresort.net. What number caller?
11.
At 312-981-7200. And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest in studio is Michael Alexander. Michael, a 30-year veteran as far as stand-up comedy goes. He's been performing, writing, producing, instructing, and he has a documentary about comedy coming out very, very, very soon called Laugh Till You're Winded, and that movie is not done yet. Hi, Michael. You're the bravest guy I know. You've got this film premiering that you've been working on for 3 years, and it's not done yet. And it premieres Wednesday.
It is.
What?
No, not Wednesday. No, it premieres on November 5th.
Oh, okay. Then you have plenty of time.
No, it's
no, you
it's
don't.
You're fine. It is 98.9% done.
You're close.
Yeah.
You're close.
Yeah,
but you're still shooting things.
I'm doing a re-interview with a comedian named Beth Stelling, who's really funny.
A writer.
Writer on Crashing and Netflix and everything else.
Yeah.
First interview was great, but I go the extra mile on this film, and so I wasn't satisfied with a couple of things aesthetically on it, so I'm flying to L.A. on Thursday just to go do a re-interview.
Wow.
And we're going to just cut it in quickly.
Wow. Yeah.
Are you going to take a big, long vacation when this finally is finished?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, all this last-minute things.
For 3 years, Michael.
Yeah, this is my fifth trip to L.A.
To bouncing back and forth to talking to people?
Yeah, absolutely. So,
how many comics in all have you talked to for this documentary?
Probably 110 comedians, producers, writers. They're not all going to be in the film, unfortunately, though. Probably one-third.
Yeah.
Is Bill still in it?
No. I'll be determining that depending on the quality of this interview.
Okay, we'll see how this goes.
You look great, by the way. You look fantastic.
Yeah,
you smell nice.
I smell nice?
Yeah. I'm not sucking up to keep myself in the movie.
Well,
I hope that's not what you're thinking.
In case you want to know my secret, it's Lever.
Are you using Lever soaps?
Lever 2000?
Yeah. I'm using the original Lever.
Oh.
I don't like the other fancy Levers.
You go with the unscented?
Yeah.
That's better.
I like the unscented. I don't like the Levers that they have like in the dish where you're not allowed to use them.
That's
those Levers. Those are fancy.
No. You made the right choice, Michael. You did.
So Wednesday, you're talking about the film doesn't have to be finished, but there is a fundraiser that's going on, correct? Is that what we're...
Wednesday at Zany's in Rosemont, we're doing a fundraiser for Laugh Till You're Winded, starring Hannibal Buress.
Nice.
and Eric and Nicole Clark and Azar. I always pronounce his name Usman. I think I butchered his name. I apologize for that, but it's a fantastic lineup.
Yeah.
Shout out to Hannibal Buress for doing this for me and for the film. He is absolutely one of Chicago's best, and a person who has been very successful, who has not forgotten his roots.
Yeah. That's cool. I hate when people do that. Yep. I'm sorry. That's just rude and inconsiderate, because we all have starts, you know?
Yeah, we do have beginnings. I've been at my beginning for 33 years. but when I in the 34th year,
yeah, that's when it usually takes off.
Absolutely do stuff for people.
Good for you.
Did you think 30 plus years ago that all these years later you would still be doing this?
No, I didn't necessarily think I would have anything to do with stand-up 30 years later. No.
No?
No, not at all.
Where did you see yourself?
As a doctor?
In 30 years?
Yeah.
I really wanted to have maybe 11 kids, live somewhere like in Idaho and like a farm and not, ignore electricity and just live on love.
Oh.
Wow. What an idyllic
situation. I hope that happens for you at some point, Michael. That would be a wonderful way to live.
It would be boring.
In Idaho.
In Idaho. Absolutely.
When we have you on next time, will you bring us potatoes from the farm? That would mean the world to us.
I would definitely ship them in, because I would be detaching from society.
All right, take us back to the film for a second. It's about to premiere. I'm sure you're excited, because 3 years into this, you just can't wait for people to finally see the finished product. Are you happy with it? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm happy with it. Yeah, absolutely.
It's too late if he's not.
Right.
Well, I have to give a shout out to my editors, Third Beacon. They've been with me since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we've been very meticulous with this project. This project has a lot of politics involved in it. So it's just, a pretty difficult project just because I've had such a broad scope.
Yeah.
But, I'm happy with it.
Well, the storyline changed a little bit, right? As you went on with it, you had one thing in mind, kind of the history of stand-up comedy in Chicago, right? And then it morphed a little bit?
Well, really, it started out, it was supposed to be an 82-minute film about the history of Bill Luff.
Oh, about me?
In Chicago.
God, who would see that?
And some people just said that they were worried about women fainting in the audience.
There would be some
wanting Bill's personal phone number.
Yes. And
so they thought we should cut in other people.
Plus, what do you do with the other 81 minutes? The first minute would be very exciting, and then it would just fall apart. But is it like what your original vision of this film being? Does it come close to matching that or not?
No, it changed. At first, I thought that I would probably be doing a film that would only depict the pre-boom, boom, and bust. Something that was just about us, our generation,
yeah.
Bill's generation and I. And then I just decided that I should widen the scope, because I shouldn't ignore what has happened since 1993, basically, where the bus started, all the way up until now. There's been a lot of great comedians who have come out of Chicago who are still here, over the, 20-year period of time or more. Mm-hmm. Bad math, sorry. And so I just thought that I would be doing the city a disservice, the stand-up community a disservice, by just concentrating on just my peers.
When people hear you say boom and bust, explain, because those happened very quick to each other, very close to each other. What created the boom in stand-up comedy, and what created the bust?
Well, from what I know, with the boom, which just created, it's just people really honestly discovering stand-up comedy for the first time. It had been around for decades.
Yeah.
And when it started hitting like nightclubs and then one-nighters and then clubs started to open, it was like an experience unlike any other that people have had. So, clubs popped up all over the country, all over the city. At one point, there were 23 rooms, I think, in the city and outside of the city. So, and then what happened is it got very oversaturated. Way too many comedy clubs. A lot of people say bad comedians. I think that was part of it as well, but just too many venues and too much stand-up on television. MTV had two shows
about
stand-up at one time.
It did happen that it was oversaturated. Mm-hmm. It sure seemed like
it. Yeah, we were just pretty much like a comedic Starbucks is what it came down to. And comedy is a very, stand-up comedy is a very unique, specialized, thing. And it shouldn't be for the masses necessarily, to be honest.
People think it's easy. I've never tried it. I would be scared to try it. You guys have done it. You can't just go up there and tell stories, you know? People think you can.
Well, you're allowed to.
Well, yeah.
But you shouldn't be.
Right, all right, good point.
But how many times did you hear this where somebody they'd go to a club and at that point it had been watered down, like you weren't getting three professional stand-ups anymore, you were getting one or sometimes two, and then a local MC who was very new to it, and people in the audience would go, I just paid money and I'm funnier than that guy. What happened?
Oh, it got to the point where it'd be like a new talent, and then the club owner who needed a lot of people and also wanted to save money,
yeah,
would ask a guy, how much time do you got? And he goes, well, I have 5 minutes. And you go, did you say 45 minutes?
Right.
Put you on stage. Yeah.
Yep. Michael Alexander's here. Michael has a benefit coming up this Wednesday at Zanies in Rosemont. For ticket information, zanies.com is the way to go.
Yeah, zanies.com.
Yeah. We'll continue this in just a little bit. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy. Bill left. It's Kwame Raoul. You're on WGN.
I'm Kwame Raoul.
You are not Kwame Raoul. Michael Alexander's here. Long time stand up. 30 years, 30 plus years. Michael, how many years?
30 plus years.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for raising my bar age by saying that. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. More than happy to. Take us back to the documentary for just a little bit. You call it, the title is?
Laugh Till You're Winded, T-I-L-L.
Because?
Why is it called Laugh Till You're Winded? Because it's the Windy City.
That's why.
And because we're in a crunch to think of a name.
Yeah.
Thank God you didn't use Chi-Town. Because no one from Chi-Town calls it Chi-Town.
No one calls it Chi-Town anymore.
Although there was a commercial I heard Friday on my way home where somebody was talking about Chi-Town, and I go, we don't call it that.
But there's a TV show called The Chi that Common is a producer on Showtime.
Oh, there is.
The Chi is better than Chi-Town.
That's a lot better.
Yes, I think so,
too. It's a lot better.
I don't love either of them, but if I'm going to settle, The Chi.
Right.
Chi? It should be
no, no, the chai is a drink.
The
chai.
Right. It's a tea. It's some sort of tea. What is it about this city? There's a certain sense of humor that goes on in Chicago that I think is a Midwestern thing. It's not New York attitude. It's not Los Angeles attitude. It's our own. You know what I mean, though, by that, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's not slick like L.A. It's not as caustic as New York.
Yeah.
But it's, kind of down to earth. But, yeah, just... honest opinions is what I can say. I don't think Chicago comedians necessarily have a filter, which is good. So,
do you think that's why for so many years, it's not that way now, but forever, whoever was the host of a popular late night talk show, mostly Johnny Carson, but you can look at everyone else of that era, they were almost always Midwesterners.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, just because I think people can relate to people from the Midwest better than they can from other cities.
Yeah.
Because we're genuine, we're real, we have hearts of gold,
don't
just like
think?
The wheat.
Yeah, similar to the wheat. we're wheat-like.
We're more corn, but I guess that's gold too. Yeah. Maize, we call it maize.
Yeah, absolutely. the bigger stars that came out of Chicago, you talked to all of them for this documentary, didn't you?
I've talked to some, mostly writers and producers that we've had come out of here. But I have, definitely talked to some people who are in front of the camera. And so
name
there are a
names.
Few people, like, I think we talked about it before. There are a few people I was not able to get, like an Arsenio Hall or a Craig Robinson, who's great, who I've known for years.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a couple others. But other than that, I pretty much got, most of the people who were celebrated out of the stand-up from here.
Why not Arsenio? I know you've had a working relationship with him for a while.
Is he from here?
From Cleveland, I think, but he did a lot of stand-up time here.
He bounced a check on me.
Did he?
The last show.
Did he really?
So, yeah, we haven't on Facebooked him, unfriended him.
That's because he needed to buy the Weather Channel, and he had no money. Oh, no, that's Byron Allen. I'm sorry.
Byron Allen has
He's
the
not
channel.
In it, is he?
Byron Allen, no, he's not from here.
No.
So
no.
Where is he from?
Another solar system. the weird thing about Arsenio Hall is, even though he's from Ohio originally, he really got his chops in Chicago, but he refused to recognize that. He didn't want to talk about that
ever.
Is
that true?
Yeah.
Well, he's a transplant, like a lot of comedians have come out of here, but they've done their time here and they launched out of here. And he made it because Nancy Wilson's manager discovered him and he opened for her, and then that helped launch his career. He worked the Comedy Cottage in Rosemont a lot and some of the other comedy clubs. But, yeah, he doesn't seem to recognize Chicago But when I wrote for his first show, mm-hmm. and the day we went into the writers' meeting for the first time, he sat down in front of all of the writers and he talked about Chicago.
Did he?
Ted Holum and the Comedy Womb and all these other clubs that were open. So he absolutely recognized
oh,
it.
Oh, good.
Then. Yeah.
That's good. I know you don't want to go into this extensively because you almost had to be in the business to appreciate it, but there was something of a comedy war for a while with two guys that started out together. Ed Hellenbrand and Jay Burke, they were two guys that were partners, and then when they split off, they created sort of a comedy war, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about that, too. I didn't go deep into it with Jay Burke, which I wish I would have, but we have comedians' opinions about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a splinter. And the funny thing is, it was the Comedy Cottage in Rosemont, and Big Ed Hellenbrand was the owner. He gave the reins to a gentleman named Jay Burke, and he moved to Las Vegas and pretty much had him send the profits. And then there was some dispute about the lease,
yep.
and there was a big court battle, which is you can see online. But in the end, Big Ed got to keep, retain the name, the Comedy Cottage, but Jay Burke got to keep the club, the yeah. physical property of the club. He renamed the club The Last Laugh.
Mm-hmm. L-A-F-F.
Because he had the last laugh on yeah, his old partner.
Yeah. And, you know, and what I like about that is it wasn't a petty move whatsoever.
Not at all. Not at all. But there was like this weird bitterness. Like if you'd bring up the name of one to the other, you could just see them. The veins would start to pop in their foreheads and stuff. They did not get along.
Yeah, they took it personally.
Yeah, very, very personally.
I can't wait to see this, Michael. I'm really looking forward to it. All the people that got their start. And a lot of comics go on, as you mentioned, to write shows because they're great writers. They wrote for themselves all this time. They know how to write funny.
Oh, absolutely. Look, we have people like John Rigi, who's executive producer, co-executive producer of 30 Rock, Greg Liana, who wrote Meet the Parents, just on and on and on. Ali Leroy, who co-created Everyone Hates Chris, mm-hmm. Lance Crowther, who was a producer on the Chris Rock Show, and he was Pootie Tang.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So many, many writers and many producers that that we interviewed. And, I mean, that really is the core of what this film is about. It's about talent that has come out of Chicago that has not been recognized and that is still undiscovered.
Yeah, yeah. And Saturday Night Live owes a lot, certainly, to both our improv scene and our stand-up scene. There's no question about it. I know the last thing you want to do is give away free tickets to this big benefit that's going on Wednesday, but Michael, I don't care. I say we're giving some away. Are you
This is for the screening. This is for the premiere. Yeah, we can't give away anything for the benefit because it's a benefit.
Right, you're trying to make money.
So let's do it for the premiere. Is that fair?
Can we just say though? So the benefit is this Wednesday at Zany's in Rosemont, and Hannibal Buress will be there.
Yes, he's the headliner.
And where do we get tickets for that?
You go to zanys.com. or Zany's Rosemont.com, and you can get tickets. It's an amazing show. If I were you, I would get tickets pretty soon.
They're almost gone.
Pretty close to sold out. All right. Pretty close.
Get those tickets now at Zany's.com, and we'll give away two pairs of tickets to the premiere. You pick two numbers at random. Not too high numbers.
Under 10.
Under 10.
Yes.
Pick them out.
Two numbers under 10. About 7? And 4.
Nope, I was thinking of different numbers. 7 and 4, 312-981-7200, be caller number 4 or caller number 7.
And we'll announce who they are. A pair of tickets to the premiere of Laugh Till You're Winded. When are we thinking this is going to happen? Do you have a date set for that?
Oh, we have a definite date. November 5th at right. Zany's on Wells.
Monday night?
Monday night, 8 o'clock show.
I'm putting it in my calendar.
Can't wait. I can't wait to finally see it. I know you feel the same.
Yeah, I can't wait to be done with it. It's a labor of love.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And,
but the gestation period has taken a lot longer than you had anticipated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's time for a separation.
Yes, absolutely.
Congratulations.
Michael, great to see you.
Thank you, guys.
That's Michael Alexander. Call now. We'll announce those winners next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. The greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. We sing the praises of Zorn.
I feel like the Gallup poll found him the best father in all the land because of the horse.
That's very possible, Wendy. Eric,
the Quinnipiac University poll was not as favorable to me, as I must say.
Speaking of polls, may I ask you, that's Eric Zorn, by the way, from the Chicago Tribune. After what happened 2 years ago in the presidential election, where all polls, spoiler alert for those of you who didn't see the outcome, where all polls said that Hillary Clinton would beat Donald Trump, and it didn't end up that way. Does that say that maybe the polling companies aren't quite as legitimate or accurate as we had once thought them to be?
They were actually very close in most
except
of
that
them,
they picked the wrong
except
person.
Except they picked. I mean, I know it's like saying, well, it was a long fly ball,
right?
But it wasn't like they completely blew it. It wasn't like they missed it by tons. But remember, they had Hillary
it's
Clinton.
It's only a 50-50 chance.
No, they had Hillary Clinton winning the popular vote by about 4%, and she ended up winning by like the popular vote by 3%. So right. Closed there, and then there were a bunch of states, and of course, some of the states surprised. I mean, they had states like Wisconsin and Michigan going for Hillary that didn't. In some cases, very narrowly. There's something. Someone did the calculation though that it's actually a very small number of votes, somewhere around 100,000 around the whole country. If you switch them around, could move them where you wanted to, that Hillary would have won the Electoral College. So it wasn't like the poll companies completely fell on their faces.
Except that they picked the wrong person.
But
I mean, don't you think people did not tell the truth? If people,
I think a lot of people didn't tell the truth.
They didn't want to admit that they were voting for Donald Trump or,
I don't think that's true this time.
No.
Now, the question Bill is asking is, could the polls be wrong now about the idea
that
the Democrats are going to take the House back? Sure, they could be wrong. A lot of people have been saying that, it all is going to depend on voter enthusiasm. When you call people home, so who you going to vote for, they'll say, I'll vote for the Democrat, I'll vote for the Republican.
Yeah.
But are they going to actually drag themselves to the polls on election day or to early voting? Are they going to actually register that choice? Is it going to matter? And so that's all about enthusiasm. And it turns out that Democratic voters, who tend to be younger and more minority voters, don't vote as heavily in these midterm elections. They tend to vote a lot more strongly in the presidential election cycle. So you have this enthusiasm gap that Republican voters who tend to be older and whiter, they tend to turn out more strongly in these midterms. Now, there's a lot of talk that the Democrats are very fired up. They're very energized. They're very upset about Kavanaugh. They're very upset about Trump. And that they're going to turn out. But it all depends on what happens on election day. If it's really bad weather through most of the country, you could see that. You could see people who are sort of low propensity voters not turning out. And this is
bad weather tends to favor who exactly?
Because it tends to favor the party with the most committed voters.
Yeah,
the ones that turn out more. There was a lot of talk that the Republican electorate was discouraged by the fact that that Trump had not built his wall, that he was and all his tweets and all the things that he's been doing that are make you cringe, and that they weren't going to turn out. Now it seems like maybe they're a little bit more fired up. There's all this concern about the caravan of refugees coming up from Guatemala, and they're not going to arrive in the United States by Election Day. Anyone was worried that there's going to be like some sort of showdown at the U.S.-Mexico border. That's not going to happen. It's about 2,000 miles from the Guatemalan border to El Paso, more or less, and a caravan only moves at about 20 miles a day at the most.
You
have 5,000 people, you got kids, back in the old West, the wagon trains moved about 10 to 20 miles a day. You just can't move that fast when you got that many people,
right?
And so they're not going to show up on the border until January.
Was their original intention to be here on or around?
I don't think I don't think so. I think this is a constant stream of people who are fleeing Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, places that are dangerous for them, and their lives there are so bad that they want to come up to the U.S. And they decided they had to get together in a caravan for their own safety, and that's why they're all in one. They're not like storming the gate necessarily, but they feel like they're safer in these numbers. So Donald Trump has said that he's going to call out the military, not just the National Guard, to stay on the border and make sure that they don't swarm across the border. I don't think that's their intention, but it's going to be pretty interesting standoff when they get to the border, because we let people in who apply for asylum. Once they come to the gate and apply for asylum, the process begins. And, right now we've been locking them up and so on, and not just letting them go. And we've been saying, well, we can only do so many at a time. The rest of you have to wait here outside. You'll basically camp out at the border. When you've got, I think the caravan has now 7,000 people in it, you're going to have a huge humanitarian crisis if you've got all these people who are just like camped out. They don't right. have much. You're probably going to have a humanitarian crisis as they're on their way here. And this seems to me like an opportunity for us to start thinking about why these people are coming here. And it's not because they want to take your jobs. It's because their lives are so bad in these countries. There's a lot of gang violence. There's a lot of internal strife there.
Sure.
And this is a chance for the U.S. to try to work with some of these Central American countries to make it less attractive for people, or the people will feel less of an urgency to go to pack up everything. I mean, you think about how you would have to feel about your life to take like basically a wagon full or something or less of your possessions and head out on a journey of more than 2,000 miles by foot.
Right.
I mean, you're in a desperate situation, and sure. I've heard the interviews with some of these people, and they talk about it is violence that they're fleeing. It's not just that they feel like their jobs aren't satisfying to them. This is a major crisis, and I think that the better way for us to address it, rather than to say, well, you can all come into the United States then, would be to fund programs and work with these governments down there to try to stabilize things, to deal with this gang violence, because their problems do become our problems one sure. way or the other. So
yep. That's Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll talk more. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is the way to do it. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
His name is Eric Zorn, Chicago Tribune columnist, and also we should mention the Mincing Rascals.
Thank you. Yes.
Great podcast. Thanks. On WGN Plus.
WGN Plus. Yeah,
you guys seem to be mincing more than usual lately.
We have been mincing our words. Yes, we have.
I don't know why.
It works for you. It's a sign of the times.
It is.
So I wanted to talk about this vehicle mileage tax.
Yeah.
Either of you have any idea what the gas tax, and when you buy a gallon of gas in Illinois, how much gas tax do you pay? Any idea?
I have no idea.
Does it vary from county to county, or is it statewide?
No, it's statewide gas tax.
I'd say 37 cents.
It's actually, if you add the federal tax to the state tax, it's about that. It's 19 cents of Illinois tax and like 18.5, I think, of federal tax, something like that. So Wendy's really close on the amount of taxes you pay per gallon. That's a fixed amount per gallon. And they set that rate in 1990 in Illinois. They had boosted it up. It had been like, so I think it was 16 cents. They boosted up a couple of cents in about 3 years' time back then. And the idea, I guess, at the time was it was going to keep going up with inflation.
Right.
But it has stayed at 19 cents because no one really wants to touch the gas tax. It's like toxic. So no one wants to look at that. And what's happened between now and then is, of course, that vehicles have gotten more fuel efficient. So we're just collecting less in the way of we're buying fewer gallons of gasoline. And of course, this gas tax goes toward fixing the roads. That's mm-hmm. what it's for. It's for that. And so I did a little calculation for my column. If you drove 1,200 miles a year, which is about average, back in 1990, and you got 28 miles a gallon, which was what the National Highway Traffic Safety Association tells me was the average, you'd have paid about $80 in state gas taxes that year, and that's about $160 in 2018, mm-hmm. $160 when you do an inflation calculation. Now, if you drive 1,200 miles this year in a car that gets 38 miles to the gallon, which is the new standard with the electric vehicles and so on, you pay about $60 in state gas taxes, and that so $60 in 2018 dollars this year versus $160. In 1990. So yeah. We're talking about $100 less that you're paying in real dollars, in actual inflation-adjusted dollars. And so the problem is that the fund that we use to pay for roads and bridges, highways and so on, is being depleted by that. And it's great. We're all really happy that people are having more fuel-efficient cars, are going mm-hmm. to hybrid vehicles and so on. But it's creating a real problem with how we fund our roads. Where is that money going to come from? Because we don't have any political courage to raise the gas tax. And it's not clear that raising the gas tax would necessarily be fair, because it would really hit, it would hit people who have to drive older cars harder. So J.B. Pritzker, in an interview with the Daily Herald in, I think it was January, he said, he sort of floated the idea that we need to think about a vehicle miles travel tax, VMT tax, and it's something that's been experimented with in Europe on trucks. It's been experimented with in Oregon, other places, where they the one model of it is they put a transponder in your car and it reports the miles that you drive, and they tax you rather than tax you for the gallon of gas that mm-hmm. you buy. They tax you on the actual number of miles you drive. And the reason why this is an attractive idea to a lot of people is that you can. It's because you can collect this information and say, okay, well, we will charge people who live out in rural areas. Say you live in McHenry County and you have to drive 15 miles to go to the grocery store. We can charge those people less, right? If we want to, you know, tweak our little algorithm so it doesn't hit those people harder. You could give people a lot of tax credits pretty easily in that way. You could also do congestion pricing in the city. You could say, well, okay, if you're going to drive into Chicago, you're going to pay X per mile if you're going to drive during rush hour. So there's all kinds of ways that you can use this to tweak the way people drive, how much they drive, and also for fairness purposes, you could give seniors exemptions now that would be very complicated to give, and so on. You could really balance it out. There's some really attractive parts of this idea. The thing that people, I wrote about this over the weekend, and I got a ton of mail on it, and the thing that bothers people the most about it, can you guess, is having a transponder in your car that tells the man where you are
Who cares?
Well, I mean, part of it, I kind of agree with you. If you're on the internet and you're giving to private companies, you're giving all this information about where you're going, what you're buying, what you're doing. And I don't think that the government would really care that much about where you're. They don't care. Hey, looks like Bill Leff has been driving about 9 miles a day going to the near north suburbs. I mm-hmm. wonder what's going on there. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it really matters that much. But there is a very strong sense that people have is this privacy sense that if you give the government that information. Now, of course, the other irony with that is there are cameras everywhere that record your as you drive around where your car is. And most of us, a lot of us have these transponders. I'm sure you guys do on. Your iPass, and your iPass tells you, where you're headed to, and it tells when you're on the tollways, and people will point out, divorce lawyers have used those to pinpoint people's locations to say, well, he was at an assignation with his mistress when he said he was at a business meeting. Yeah. We have the records to prove it, and so on.
Will they get taxed more for that?
The assignation tax is huge.
Yes.
So I got a ton of mail. A lot of people were very upset about the privacy implications of this. Other people were saying that, well, why don't we just charge people by the mile? Just at the end of the year, you got to report your mileage, or you got to go to the Secretary of State's office, and they read your odometer, and we'll just charge you by the mile. The problem with that, of course, is that it does become pretty regressive.
Oh yeah,
that people who and the other, of course, one other thing I wanted to mention is a way that you could do is you could give people. Part of the thing about gas tax is it's a user fee, essentially. They call it, actually, the official name is a motor fuel user fee. And so, essentially, it's because you're using the roads. They presume that you put gas in your car, you drive on the roads, and therefore you're using the roads in proportion to the amount of gas you buy, which is not totally true because, some people have these gas-efficient cars, and some people have these big honking SUVs or small trucks and so mm-hmm. on. So you could actually calibrate the charge by the kind of vehicle you have, the kind of wear and tear that it puts on the roads. So there's all these ways that this could work that if you just had people reporting their mileage, it wouldn't work. But again, we run into this roadblock, or this privacy roadblock. Well, Governor Rauner in the election has been throwing this back at Pritzker. Pritzker has basically disavowed it. He said, well, I just said we got to think about something. We got to figure out a way to around this problem, which is true. We have to figure out a way to fund our roads. And if you're just all anti-tax, stop taxing us, someone's got to pave those roads. Someone's got to rebuild those bridges.
But in the end, Eric, isn't the difference between paying the traditional tax on gas that we have been paying and the new idea for their driving tax, it's roughly $20 per person, right? It's somewhere in that range per year. It's not more than that, is it?
Do you mean in terms of what it would cost?
Yeah.
Well, it would all depend on how it was implemented. Huh. And what Pritzker said was we should need to experiment with this to make sure that it's done correctly. Again, he said this and then pulled it back away.
Yeah.
And Rauner has been using this in commercials against him, saying, he wants to tax you to go visit your friends. Well, of course, when you're driving to visit your friends now, you're already paying the gasoline tax.
Yeah.
So you are being taxed to visit your friends. But it's one of these things that's just been demagogued to death. And, of course, Governor Rauner hasn't offered any solutions, and even potential solutions, to how are we going to pay for the roads. And, you know, we could keep just, you know, raising taxes, you know, income taxes, which is, you know, if you do it in a graduated way, it could be progressive that way. But we already have fairly high taxes. Yeah. So it is a really interesting issue. And anyone wants to contact me about it at the Tribune, my address is ericzorn@gmail.com. So I'm always glad to hear from people about this.
Thanks, Eric. Greatly appreciated. We'll see you in a week.
Great.
It's Eric Zorn, everybody. We'll take a quick break and then tell you what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
And coming up, all the stories that matter with Doma Tipongo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.